Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You don't even need to hear lyrics at this point, do you? Because you know that music. And certainly you know it now as you listen to that. Hey, welcome to the podcast, everybody. It's an all-theater day today. I just thought we'd take a break from some of the politics and let you know about some of the great theater going on around the city. That absolutely recognizable, unforgettable music is one of the themes from Les Miserables, which is a musical phenomenon. It's been around the world for years, but it is back in Chicago. It's at the Cadillac Palace Theater until October 29th. I saw it on opening night. Absolutely amazing show. And so we get a chance to chat with the incredibly talented actor who plays Javert, the evil guy, Josh Davis. You've seen him on Broadway in Beautiful, the Carole King musical. A lot of off-Broadway shows, but let's get right to it with Les Miserables. Josh, welcome to the podcast. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. Evil, huh?
Yeah, well, I was just that was my first question. I've always seen Javert that way, but actually, maybe that's not fair because listen, for those who have never seen Les Mis, and there are people out there, a little bit about the plot, and maybe that wasn't fair. Maybe it's more appropriate to say Javert undergoes a change and an awareness.
Well, I think it all has to do with the perspective of the character. You know, I don't most evil characters don't think of themselves as evil.
yeah, you're not like Scar in The Lion King or anything.
Exactly. Yeah, he doesn't. He believes he's living a righteous life. That just happens to be his downfall. So basically, the premise. I mean, it's based on Victor Hugo's book, which is an enormous book. Sort of like the Game of Thrones before the Game of Thrones.
It's true. But
it's an epic story, but it's a fairly simplistic in its idea of human themes. You know, there's a love theme with a young person named Marius and right. Cosette. There is the idea of being human to the sense of being able to change. You know, you have this main character of Jean Valjean, who, when we meet him, he has just served 19 years in prison of hard labor.
And what did he do? What did he do?
Stealing a loaf of bread.
Exactly. I mean, think about that in today's judicial system, but let's save that for another day.
Exactly. He stole a loaf of bread to feed his sister's son, and he gets caught. And because he ran, he gets 5 years for stealing a loaf and the rest, basically the 14 years for running away. And we're meeting him, you know, just when he's getting out, and Javert is a young lad who is, an up and comer in the police force, and they have, you know, he's going about his normal day, calling out the prisoners who have parole, and he gets a little flack from this Valjean character, and he sort of clocks them. They it's the first time they meet each other, and they will meet again many times throughout the story. Many decades, basically, that this story takes place.
As they both undergo sort of transformations of a personality and what is right in life and all of that, of course, you say Jean Valjean, and to me, all I can think of is 24601, which
exactly.
is the prisoner number, which kind of comes through all the way. So playing this character, I mean, so he is, I mean, Javert, at least I see it as sort of a darker character in the show, although, as you say, he does transform throughout the course of the show. But talk to me, you know, somebody who's been in shows like Beautiful and all this positive stuff, how much of a challenge is this role for you?
Vocally, it's very challenging. In Beautiful, I played a righteous brother and a couple other characters, and the music was not as challenging vocally. This is close to opera as you can get in musical theater. It's very classical singing, big, bold, lots of emotion behind the songs, and the show is 3 hours long. So that's also a little bit grueling, but it's such a wonderful piece that it doesn't seem like it's that long. The character of Javert is, I joke and say that he's not evil, but like you could, you know, on a scale from 1 to 10, he's definitely a darker character.
Yeah.
He has a this sort of worldview of right and wrong, of black and white, and things are either good or bad, or, you know, good or evil. And he sees Valjean as this person who is evil, who has not paid for his sins, because he basically breaks his parole after he gets out. And Javert is tracking him down, bumps into him, and basically they have this quick altercation, and then he basically makes it his life mission to track him down. And the fault of Javert is that he can't change, is that he, you know, where you have Valjean, who, you know, is a criminal and then basically becomes like the, you know, the mayor of the town, and then, you know, this great, you know, stepfather to Cosette. And it basically leads a righteous life after he's sort of shown the way.
You know, and
whereas Javert can't do that.
My experience with shows, the more years they're around and they start to travel, you know, you kind of go from the national tour. Pretty soon you're in a truck and ladder show, and pretty soon it looks like, you know, they borrowed some sets from somebody's backyard to put it up. But this show, pretty much as big, cast maybe a touch smaller, but as big as grand as I remember it. The sets are absolutely gorgeous and amazing. And I'll tell you, and by the way, the your numbers in the show, we don't have a track of it, but it's your number called Stars, and some of the great numbers, If You Fall, you know, that notion. It's just fantastic. And this music, which has been around, I guess, almost 30 years now, I just found myself sitting there, and, you know, I know every song before it starts. I know almost the whole show, as we all do, and I'm singing along with you. But it never gets tiring. What is it, do you think, about this score, about this show, that has stood the test of time for nearly three decades?
You know, that's a good question, and it's hard to answer. The melody... The melodies that Claude Michel has written are timeless, and it's, you know, if you could define what that means, then you'd be a very wealthy man.
Yeah.
Because it's so difficult to say, like, what makes a good song and why it touches us. You know, the story, like I said, it's a very humanistic story, and the music just really mirrors and magnifies all of the emotions that are going on. So if you have something as epic as Stars, or something as funny as Master of the House, it really just encapsulates those themes. And again, it's like, you know, it's how do you put that? How do you quantify that? It's art. I'm not really sure. Not to like not answer your question, but I wish I had an answer to what makes it so epic.
Well,
you know, the lyrics, the melodies, it all just comes together.
My take on it is, and it doesn't mean I'm right, but I will compare, you can see whether you agree with this or not. I think what Hamilton has done for musicals in modern day, today, is what Les Mis did for musical theater when it premiered. I mean, it became part of a genre, Miss Saigon, even Phantom of the Opera, and a lot of Andrew Lloyd Webber's work. I mean, it sort of, to me, changed. You know, it was the days of Oklahoma were kind of over. And so for me, that's what Les Mis represented. It was a way of, you don't have to like opera, in fact, but it's operatic in its nature. But at the same time, it's sophisticated, it's classy, it's deep, it's mesmerizing. There were people in the audience, there were some young people that night, and there were moments where, I understand from friends who saw them too, they were crying. I mean, they were just so moved by so many of these scenes. They'd never seen the show before. They're young people. So it still has this grasp on theater lovers, and I think it changed theater as we know it when it premiered.
I think so. I mean, all the shows that you just mentioned were all Cameron McIntosh shows.
Yeah.
So he probably had a little bit to do with it.
Absolutely.
And just being able to take that epic sound and make it accessible to audiences in a way that I think soap opera it doesn't do. You know, I think the thing with musical theater is you have these accessible storylines and you have a little bit of, you know, this whole show is basically sung the entire time. Whereas, like in Oklahoma, you have, you know, a song and then a scene and then a song and a scene.
Right.
With Hamilton, it was such a groundbreaking show. But you're right. I think it does build upon, you know, all of the previous things that we've seen. It's funny because it's playing right down the street, mm-hmm. and it's kind of interesting because we've had, you know, our audiences have been amazing, and we've been selling out. You know, tickets are still available, but we've been having fantastic,
tell people how to get them too.
Fantastic houses, and it's. I don't feel like it's an old show. It feels like it's a very new show. You know, especially with all of the things. I mean, you saw it, so you got to see like the projections on the back wall.
Yeah, right.
How that sort of mixes in with the music, and you know, the cast is, you know, it's still a big cast. We have 38 people. So it's still the old Les Mis that people love, but it has a sort of a new flair and new twist. You know, the turntable isn't there, but we have the way that it's been directed has really brought the story out even more so than I think it has before. That sort of certain highlights of certain themes are even bigger mixed with all of the audio and the visuals.
For me, the test of a great show when you can walk out
time.
And when you can't get the music out of your head, that's the sign that you've seen a great show.
And what's awesome is that, like, when I saw it back in the 80s or the late 80s, 90s as well, when I was a younger lad, and it blew me away. And I didn't think I was going to be an actor when I grew up. I was going into business, or, you know, I was wanting to be an architect or something. And and as I moved along, I didn't even go to acting school. I didn't start acting until I was 28. But that show stuck with me. And to be able to come out afterwards and see kids who are in middle school and high school and it still moves them is incredible. It's still touching, and it still is very much in the pulse of you know, the world in terms of, like, the art and how people can relate to it. So I don't really think that it doesn't feel like, oh, let's go see this, like, old classic show. It's like, let's go see this amazing story.
No question. Were you mad that you were too old to play Gavroche?
You're never too old to play Gavroche, are you really?
I think not. I think that's right.
Maybe too tall.
You might see me show up one night and just push the kid off and take the role myself. And, of course, lines like "to love another person is to see the face of God," just some just magic lines that hang with you.
You know, it's funny. I think that's basically, I mean, that's the theme, right? That's the theme. There's a lot of themes in there, but that's, like, if you're going to take one, that would probably be the best one you could take.
I think so. That's probably why it sticks with me. I really encourage everybody you only have until October 29th. It's not a long time to see it, but don't miss it, because it's as good as you remember it. And if you haven't seen it, it's a show you need to have behind you and to see. It's incredible. You can get tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com. BroadwayInChicago.com. Les Miserables is playing at the Chicago's Cadillac Palace Theater. Gorgeous theater. Gorgeous set. Incredible acting. Yeah. Very much so. And Josh Davis, you're just fabulous as Javert. I'm going to get an opportunity to, in another setting, interview your colleague Nick Cartel, who plays Jean Valjean, tomorrow. So I'll give him your best, if you don't mind.
Well, please do.
Okay. Of course, you'll see him tomorrow too. But anyway,
I don't like to talk to him too much, you know, because it ruins our chemistry.
Yeah, that's right. You got to dislike each other. And
he's actually fantastic, and we have a great time, especially in rehearsal when we really play off each other really well.
Maybe I'll make up a line and say you don't really like him. No, I'm kidding.
That'll only motivate him to speed me up.
I love it. Josh Davis, the fantastic role of Javert in Les Miserables. I said it officially that way. At the Cadillac Palace Theater until October 29th. BroadwayInChicago.com. We're going to play you out, Josh, with some great music from the show. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. I love it. You know that music. If it's striking you going, I know that. What's that from? What's that from? Well, it's a song called Shine. It is from the incredible musical called Billy Elliot, the musical. It is playing now at Porchlight Music Theater in its brand new space, by the way. We'll talk about that as well. But Porchlight's 23rd season, kicking it off with, boy, you want to take on a challenge. This is the show to take a challenge on, and that is Billy Elliot. Remember it from Broadway. Remember it from its national tour. And I'm not so sure it's even been done by any other regional theaters or any other place in Chicago that I can recall until Porchlight grabbed a hold of it, getting absolutely wonderful reviews, not just by me and my review, but my colleague Chris Jones over at the Tribune and others all around. Everybody's loving this show. So it is my pleasure to welcome to the show the woman who directed it, co-choreographed it, Brenda Didier. She's like a regular on this podcast because, like, she directs everything in the city. Brenda, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks.
And also playing the role of Dad, Sean Fortunato joins us, and it's a tough role. He plays a coal miner. I'm going to ask you about the story behind this in a little bit. But Sean, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Mrs. Wilkerson, you want to talk about the person who gives Billy Elliot his motivation, his inspiration to be all that he can be. It takes that special dance teacher who sees something in him. Mrs. Wilkerson, who's played by Shanasia Davis, and she joins us as well. Shanasia, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, and I should say, Billy was going to join us. We were going to have you. Two kids are playing Billy, but, you know, they go to school. And unlike the rest of us, they actually have this real life that they have to deal with. In class, we just get to play artists all the time, right? So, Sean, let me just start with you, because this Billy Elliot, if people don't know the show, let's assume they may not. This is actually based in history. This, you go back to, I think it's like 1984 and the days of Margaret Thatcher. And can you kind of fill people in on what this story, based in fact, is?
Yeah, it's the story of a boy, Billy, who and his community, the people around him who are going through a very difficult time. He lives in a community where both his father and his brother are both minors, and there is another strike, so his family is out of work. Everybody in his community, all of his close friends, their families are all struggling, and particularly for him, he has a tough time because not only is he amongst his community that's struggling, but he's got a personal struggle as well, which is that his own passions and interests lie in a different area than that of all of the other people that he's used to dealing with in his daily life.
Yeah, and I mean, Dad wants him to be a boxer and grow up to be that you know, what every butch kid is supposed to be as they're growing up. And Shanasia, Mrs. Wilkerson, sees he kind of sneaks in, I guess, to the ballet class. I keep wanting to speak in that proper dialect that you have, ballet. And you see something in him. Tell me about Mrs. Wilkerson, what she sees in Billy, who's supposed to be a boxing kid.
Yeah, there's something about him that is just different from anything else that, you know, she may have seen. And the kid is so, some people just have a specialness to them. And I think Billy is that, that has a specialness to Mrs. Wilkerson. He's just curious and he's open, and that, you know, piques a certain curiosity in Mrs. Wilkerson as well, and just wants to explore that. And he's a boy.
Yeah,
and that's special in itself that a boy would be here. So she kind of sees an opening and takes advantage of that, and to everyone's benefit. I think he makes the whole place happier.
Well, I think that's right. And, of course, his family loves him, and Sean, character Dad, has to kind of, you know, go along with these changes. And Dad goes through a bit of a modification in his own life, realizing what's important in life. Brenda, what a challenge Billy Elliot is to put on. I can remember 2010 was when the national tour came to Chicago, and I mean, I have to give you, I'm sure you're going to share this credit, you can go ahead and share it, but what amazed me, the amount of scene changes and the sets, it absolutely struck me how you had this thing designed, or it got designed, so that you were able to smoothly move sets, move scenes, move props, move furniture in a way that was absolutely transitional. We never had to have the lights come down and watch a blank stage while we were waiting for the scene to change. It all just happened without interruption.
Mm-hmm. That was a challenge, among other things. When I did Dreamgirls for Portside a couple years ago, we kept it really minimalistic, the way Michael Bennett did, with the cinematic feel.
Yeah, it was a great show. I saw it. Great show.
Like this would be stronger with just keeping the emotion going, keeping the narrative forward without stopping. And that was our goal. The set designer Chris Roten did a beautiful job. We wanted to create a world that was cold, just like the mining, you know, town was, and the family life. And create that world within, you know, the box of the Ruth Page Theater, which is huge.
Right.
But it was a lot of fun.
And also the challenge of the dialect. And I got to tell you, look, Billy, how old are you? You have two kids who play Billy, because by law, whatever, they all can't do eight shows a week. But how old is Jacob and Lincoln?
Jacob is 11, and Lincoln just turned 14 last month.
Okay, so, and to train, and forget the kids, the adults can speak to this too, but Brenda, I'll stay with you. Getting people to learn the dialect for this, I mean, this is a pretty heavy dialect. Everybody, I think, mastered it. I didn't hear any flaws in anybody's diction in terms of what they, and of course, in an audience, you have to kind of pay attention, like referring to young people as the Ben, and all of these sort of colloquial phrases that are part of that region, that era. How much of a challenge was that, Brenda? for you to work with dialect coaches and the cast?
Well, we were very fortunate to have Sammy Grant, our dialect coach, mm-hmm. who worked very meticulously with the group on the adult ensemble as well as the children, and then one-on-ones. She's just really gifted, and I think she pulled it off brilliantly, and our cast worked very hard.
Sean, you know, they say never work with kids and dogs. You get kids. but in this, I mean, and there's a lot of kids in this show, but they're magical, right? They're not, I don't know that I call them scene stealers or anything like that. You are just working with one talented group of people.
I really am. We're really fortunate. I think part of it is just that not only do we get really talented kids, but Brenda brought together a group of really just wonderful people to be around. So they are, it's extraordinary how professional they are, and how open they are. They're so, sometimes, with adult actors, it may take a little time to chip away and get them to open up and explore. Whereas these kids were so willing to go to really vulnerable, honest places very quickly, which is so much fun to play off of.
And Brent, I got to come back to you for a second before I go to Shanasia, and that is the kids. I know the Billies, of course, they are actually dance students. I mean, they're primarily dancers. They happen mm-hmm. to be triple threats because they can sing and act as well. Is that true for most of the children in the show? Were they dance students who you brought into this, or were most of them able to learn the dance they needed to learn for this show?
Well, we had, the first call we did was a dance call, and then some of them, you know, were proficient. Obviously, the Billies have to be very strong, and some of the Michael. But the girls, you know, they don't have to be that strong because they are very strong, but because they are pupils of Mrs. Wilkinson. However, they're all trained. They're all triple threats. And you know what? Because they're so talented, it's difficult for them to be, to dance, I don't want to say badly that term, but, you know, show that they're still weak. Because
yeah.
they say to me, can we be good now, or should we still be struggling? You know, so we had to find that those moments, and they're terrific kids with terrific families and parents who support them, which I think is a huge reason this is working, because you've got these parents behind these great kids, which is the theme of the show, Billy Elliot, anyway.
And by the way, and Shanasia, I have to say, your kind of partner in crime in the dance studio is Mr. Braithwaite, who's played by Tommy Novak. He's just so much fun to watch. I don't know if you sense that from the audience, but it's just every time he's, you know, doing whatever he's doing, you just kind of keep an eye on him.
Yeah, he's like that. He's that kind of person. He's just a very, very, very sweet man, and just open to everything, and extremely talented. Yeah.
Can I ask you an unfair question, Shanasia?
Mm-hmm.
So I interviewed Elton John when the show first opened, and one of the questions I asked him, I'm going to see if you can guess what his answer was, because we talked about the music, and of course you sing one of the best songs. Well, I love all the songs. I shouldn't say that, but you sing Shine, which is such a great song among others. And but I did ask him, when songs like Electricity, for example, which Billy sings, I asked him whether or not he had in his mind the concept that a young boy would be singing this and then writing to that need. What do you think Elton John said, Sir Elton John?
What do I think he said about writing to that as a kid?
Yeah, I asked him whether he did, whether as he wrote that, he was writing for a child's voice. Do you think he said he did or he didn't write for the child's voice? Just mm-hmm. a little trivia question. I'll give you the answer.
That's a good question. So I'm going to say he wrote it as his kid, as an adult. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm horrible at trivia.
Okay. Well, no, you wouldn't know the answer. I just want to. Now I got to have everybody guess. Sean, what do you think? He wrote for a kid or he didn't write for a kid?
I can imagine that if he didn't write for a kid, then he wrote as himself, and that, you know, a lot of performers, a lot of artists, a lot of writers still have a kid's heart.
Yeah.
So even if he wrote as himself, yeah. I would imagine that. That would work.
So that's not far from the answer. His answer was, when I asked him that, and I have these reels and I kind of keep that footage in there, and he kind of turned his head a little bit. He goes, actually, no, I didn't write for the kid. He said, I wrote it as I would want to sing it if I were doing this number.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, yeah. So, Brenda, is that surprising for you to hear? I'm just curious, or maybe you knew
not
about
at
that.
All. No, when I was doing research for the show, the fact that Elton John connected to this movie so strongly when he saw it, he related to Billy because his father didn't want him to play music, didn't want him to study the arts. So, of course, you know, Elton would write it for himself because he felt he's connected to who Billy was when Elton was a child. So it makes sense to me.
There you go. That's why I didn't ask you the question, because you would have said that and then taken all the fun out of it. So, and for all of you, this is everybody's first time in this new space. You're at the Ruth Page Center, which is a dance studio. It's actually where River North performed and rehearsed. There's still rehearsal spaces there. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, actually, for all of you, because I think a lot of you have been in porch light shows. What is your thinking of this new space? Is it a good thing? You're glad you're there? Brenda, you direct so many shows. What's your sense of working in the new space?
I love the new space. I love the fact that it's an arts, you know, building. It's so old, and it houses the Ruth Page Center of the Art, the dance studio. I used to take classes there when I was 16, and honestly, it looks exactly the same. I think it's nice for Porchlight to move to the Gold Coast and have a new community, and yet our subscribers are excited about it. There's something, I don't know, it feels good. It was scary. I think the company, you know, anytime you move, it's risky. But I feel like this show, Michael Weber did a brilliant job with picking the show to be the first one to launch their season.
I agree. I got
it's
so excited.
Great marriage. I love it.
When he announced that, it was amazing. And Shanasia, I have to say that there are still moments of the show. I've probably seen it, half a dozen or more times. Chris Jones, by the way, today gave it an incredible, if you didn't see it, as I said, I gave it a great review, but so did Chris Jones, and his is more important than mine. And and we both talk about the fact that even though we've seen the show a million times, but there's something about this one, still a tear to the eye. Still, you know, when Billy has the scenes with his mother, and the first one where you read the letter with him and the mom shows up, those are really tough. Do you get emotional on stage, Shanasia, with those, or are you just used to it?
I do, no, and I always get emotional, and this is the first time that, I was in this space back, it was my first job, that theater job that I'd gotten, and we performed in the Ruth Page. The Victory Gardens did a production of The Kong, written by Stephen Carter, and so to come back, you know, years later in that same space where I was a dancer on that stage is pretty incredible. And sometimes that, you know, that kind of, I'm reminded of that when I'm on that stage. And then that letter, the song, and sometimes I just watch the Billy, you know, because they're both so lovely to watch.
Yeah.
And to hear Nicole's voice, it's beautiful, how beautiful to be able to watch them interact and create that story. And just for, you know, for my character to be on the periphery of it, and watch it. It's something I do get emotional about. There are a few emotional moments and touching moments, and I think that's why it's lasted so long.
Yeah.
Because it's a human story, and it touches on a lot of people who it inspires a lot of people. It inspires kids like crazy. I wouldn't be surprised if it inspires some adults to follow their dreams, to step out of their box.
Well, I think that's right.
And I think that's why it lasts, and that's why audiences keep coming back.
I think it's so powerful for kids, you know, the Michaels of the world, who was, you know, Billy's best friend and the Billys of the world, to just be true to who you are and be able to pursue it. Sean, I just have to ask you this. You know, there are two different Billys because that's what the way it has to be. And I'm not going to ask you which one you like more. Don't worry about that. Although if you like one more. No, I'm kidding. Does it change your role? Are you a different dad in your relationship with Lincoln Seymour when he's Billy versus Jacob Kaiser? Does that matter to you? Or it's just, no, Billy is Billy.
You know, it's extraordinary how much is the same, but also just as far as the technical outline of the show. But interacting with them from night to night, there's not only been a significant difference between the two of them and the way they make me feel, which is, I'm playing a character who's not a man of many words, so a lot of what I do is receiving, is reacting to them, is taking in what they're experiencing. And not only is there a difference between the two of them, but their growth is so extraordinary. Like, if you had told me, a week ago that where they were, their performance level was where it was going to be for the rest of the run, I would have been thrilled. But what's extraordinary is that because this is so new to them, so fresh to them, they grow exponentially just from performance to performance. So sometimes it's even a bigger change to go from one from the same actor to his next performance, as opposed to from one actor to the other actor, or just as large.
Yeah.
Because they are learning so much and experiencing things in such an immediate way.
Well put. And
one of the other things that we did that I think is a large kudos to Brenda is that we switched Billies during the rehearsal process. So we'd rehearse a scene with one Billy, and then we'd rehearse a scene with the other Billy. So we kind of grew with them and learned their energy and learned that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was nice, too.
Brenda, was that a challenge, by the way, having to have, different people play the role, or that just comes with the territory?
It comes with the territory. It's just, it takes longer, the time, as far as the quantity, because it's important that they both get a chance to do it. And also, it's interesting, Paul, they both go to the same dance studio. They don't go to the same school, but they know each other already through competitive dance and dance class. It's called All About Dance in Chicago. So we had a week with the Billies before we worked with anyone else, just to get to know them a little bit. I really wanted them to tap into their life, the best times of life. What's a painful moment for you? Journal about it. And when we get to a certain place in the show, you're going to have to remember, tap into that. And then it was sweet because they love to watch each other. I heard, I don't know if Sean told me this, somebody told me this, that they give each other a hug backstage no matter who's going on. Because the other Billy will always be in the show in a couple moments just in case, something happens, God forbid, they're there. But they support each other. They cheer each other on. And the first thing I told them was, I don't want you to play the same Billy. Your experiences, Lincoln, are very different than Jacob and vice versa. So you're going to be your unique Billy. And whatever that means to you is fine with me, as long as it makes sense and serves the story.
Yeah.
So right away, we really tried to embrace their individuality and not make them carbon copies of each other, which I think is exciting for the show to keep it fresh and for both Shay and for Jean.
Which means that the kids are a lot less catty than I am. I'd be pushing the other one off the stage when I'm going on tonight, get away from me.
They tease each other. They say that. They go, look out.
I love it. Well, the show is Billy Elliot, the music, so well done. As I said, rave reviews coming at it, including from me and Chris Jones over at the Trib and others, I'm sure, as I see the reviews come out. It's playing through November 26th, extended past Thanksgiving week. It not to be missed over at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts, about 1100 Dearborn is where it is. And it's just a show not to be missed. I want to thank you guys and congratulate all of you on doing such an incredible job with this show. You got to be having fun with it. I wish I could be cast in it. It's just too late, but you never know. And tickets can be gotten at porchlightmusictheater.org. Theater spelled the correct way, T-R-E at the end. porchlightmusictheater.org. I love the British part of that. And if I may, thank Sean, Brenda, Shanasia. Thank you so much for your time. Have a great run, and I'm going to probably come back and see it with the other Billy just so I can see everybody.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. We're going to go out with a little bit of Solidarity from Billy Elliot, the musical.
Solidarity, solidarity, solidarity forever. We're proud to be working class. Solidarity forever.
Prepare for UX.
Solidarity, solidarity, solidarity forever. We're proud to be working class. Solidarity forever.
More familiar music. I know you know it, and just in case you're not placing it, you're like, wait a minute, I know that show, I know that. It's Bewitched, one of the classic sitcoms of all time, and a favorite of everybody's. It's still on somewhere at all hours of the day and night. Now, don't get excited if you think I'm about to talk to the original cast of Bewitched. No, I'm not. Don't think anybody's around except for Tabitha and Adam, and I've actually interviewed her. But there is a great show going on now being put on by Handbag Productions, Helena Handbag Productions. It is called Bewildered, and it is over at Stage 773, and we've got two of the stars of it, but it's not even just that show. There's so many things these guys are doing. Let's just get to it. Joining me now, David Serta. He is the co-founder of Helena Handbasket. Helena Handbag. I'm sorry. I gotta get that. Although, if you could change it to hand basket, that would make my life easier. I wouldn't have to correct
it. Okay, yeah, sure.
He's our artistic director as well. He's playing Endora. You remember Endora, the great Agnes Moorehead had that role, and you kind of look a lot like her, I got to tell you, along with the attitude.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I tried.
Yeah, we're also going to talk about...
person.
Well, that's whatever. It works. We're going to talk about The Golden Girls as well. It's another show going on Saturday nights, and David is in that, too. He plays Dorothy in that role, the B. Arthur role, if you're not connecting to that. And A.J. Wright is joining us. He's an ensemble member of Handbag, but also directs everything, and he plays one of the two Darren. There are two Darrens, as there were in Bewitched, and he is one of the Darrens in Bewildered, and he's Blanche in The Golden Girls. And we're going to also mention quickly Rudolph the Red-Hosed Reindeer, see how tough that was, which is coming up again in holiday season. David, I got, you know what? This is sounding so kooky. What is the purpose and the mission of the theater company? Because it really is paying tradition and homage to the great classics.
Yes. Well, that's one of our mission statements. But we do parody and homage and camp to Chicago. We bring that, and we, you know, pop culture parody and just carrying on the great tradition of camp throughout the ages. Charles Ludlum, Charles Bush, you know, Bill,
yeah,
that sort of thing. Just and so we subscribe to the theater of the ridiculous.
And that's what makes it so fun. The reviews, by the way, have been great. People are just loving it. I've seen the shows, and they are so much fun. And as you say, very campy, very fun. But what's interesting, the decision made in Bewildered by Aaron Benham, Ron Weaver, was to put the focus. I mean, if you were to say to me, who's the focus? I say, well, it's going to be on Samantha. That's Elizabeth Montgomery. Of course, it's not. I mean, it
right.
is, but it's all about Gladys Kravitz, that nosy neighbor. What a brilliant concept to come with, who, by the way, Caitlin Jackson plays that role, and she's just amazing. You want to talk about talent and voice, she's got it. But
yeah,
what do you think led to the focus of, let's take it from Gladys's perspective?
AJ, you want to take that?
AJ.
Yeah, no, I mean, so we've been, Handbag's been really fortunate to be involved in Bewildered through the entire workshop process, going back to 2013. We did two workshops, readings of it before now producing it. And I know that Ron, who's been involved since day one, really identifies with the whole kind of the idea of being the non-traditional leading lady. You know, Gladys sings a song in the show about not being the leading lady in her own life, how
right.
she's only a supporting character. And I think that a lot of people can relate to that. You know, certainly a lot of people in the LGBT community can relate to that. So he kind of wanted to shine the spotlight, as it were, on those secondary characters who probably have really fascinating stories, but for whatever reason aren't given the chance to tell them.
And the show, all the references to the 60s sitcoms, I mean, I was trying to make a list of them, and Mr. Ed and the Munsters and the Flying Nun. I mean, they all sort of show up in this thing. The lines, I mean, we all remember Samantha saying, my stars, you know, and which they're all in there. You got all the references, but I have to do a shout out because there was a point where, you know, you're going to have a family member join. Well, not Aunt Clara, who, of course, we all remember from the show, or even Esmeralda. But instead, you go with Uncle Arthur, played by Paul Lynde in Bewitched, played by Ed Jones here. And David,
right.
am I telling you anything you don't know when I tell you that Ed Jones brings the house down?
Oh, of course. He always that's what he does. That's what Ed Jones does. He brings the house down.
It's just fantastic.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He's one of our founding members of Handbag.
Yeah, and is always going to get that kind of classic role because he often brings the house down. By the way, I should have said, AJ, if I didn't, you're also in Golden Girls playing Blanche in that show. And for people that want to kind of get a lot of all this, but the Golden Girls, which was further north, everything now is at Theater 773. But Golden Girls is only on Saturday nights, right, AJ?
Right.
Yeah, so originally, David wrote it, and it was just this little concept of like, let's do this thing for nine performances. It was Wednesdays and Thursdays at Hamburger Mary's in Mary's Attic.
Right.
And it was supposed to be nine performances. I think we sold out all nine of those performances maybe in the first week. And so it just kept extending. And then it was like, now let's do it on Thursdays and Fridays. And then we'll do some Saturdays. And you know, David's not an idiot, so if the public keeps demanding it, certainly we're going to keep doing it. And
why don't you do what the Book of Mormon guys do? Shut it down, even though people want to see it.
Right. Well, we're going to have to do that, I think, for the holidays because we're so busy, but it'll be coming back.
Yeah. We should say this. So right now, people that want to see Golden Girls on a Saturday night, it's going to run into November. What is the wrap date on that one? Is it November 11th, I think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, November 11th.
Okay. And then you mentioned the holidays, so let's get this in. Because you're also bringing back by popular demand, Rudolph the Red Hosed Reindeer 2017. Yes. David, you wrote that one. AJ, you're writing it. The two of you are like attached at the hip here. Tell folks a little bit about Rudolph.
Rudolph is a parody of the Rankin Bass television special that we all grew up with from 1964 or something like that, or 65.
Been around forever.
And it's the claymation with the reindeer that is a misfit. He doesn't fit in with the other reindeers, and the elf that wants to be a dentist. And it's just the recurring theme of Hell in a Handbag is being a misfit and not fitting in with society. And for me as a child, that's how I felt growing up, being different from other people. I'm from Northwest Indiana, Hammond, Indiana, and I just did not fit in with the blue collar crowd in Hammond, and
I'm shocked.
Right. Sure. Yeah. And so it really spoke to me, and so I did it. It was a parody, and it's sort of like my life story in Christmas form, I guess.
Gotcha. This show actually is back up at Mary's Attic, right? Not 773. Up at Mary's Attic.
Mm-hmm.
That one's November 25th to December 30th, so all through the holidays, and you don't want to miss that. And just a quick, shout out to the Golden Girls. It's called Golden Girls, The Lost Episodes. Absolutely love the Golden Girls, and I got to tell you that you guys who play these roles, I mean, you really, the costumes are great. You really get the B is B, Blanche is Blanche. And this is original dialogue. You're not
Rose.
Rose and Sophia, Scotty Greider, by the way, was great when he took on that role for a bit. But I had to tell you that it's really so on, but it's original. You're not performing a Golden Girls script. This is original material.
There's a lot of Golden Girls shows around the country where they're just doing the scripts, and that's not the Handbag way. We want to give original content and live up to our mission statement. So it's all original. It's the kind of things that you imagine they might say or do.
The lines are absolutely right on. In fact, great job. So I want people to check you all out. Go to the website, which is handbagproductions.org, which is short for Hell in a Handbag Productions. See, that's why I messed it up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and again, if you're somebody who just loves paying homage and tribute to this kind of part of culture in a very campy, fun way, preserving, exploring, celebrating these great works of the past, I always look forward. You're in your 15th season now, right? I think that's...
We are.
Yeah.
Celebrated it. We had our benefit the day before yesterday. I think we're both still tired.
That's all right. If you're tired, that means it's time to go back on stage. But I want to encourage people to also get tickets at handbagproductions.org or through Brown Paper Tickets. I'll give you a phone number too, 800-838-3006. The great part about podcasts is rewind it and you can hear it again. 800-838-3006. And so that is the Golden Girls. We're going to actually go out with a little Golden Girls music because I love it so much.
Yeah, and you can get tickets to all the things you mentioned through our website. There's different portals. So
To just get to show you, I've been there, and you're absolutely right. So you don't want to miss Bewildered. That's playing now through November 11th at Stage 773. Mm-hmm. Rudolph up at the Mary's Attic. So much going on through December 30th, starting on November 25th, and the Golden Girls on Saturday nights, only till November 11th. But as you promised, it'll probably come back after the holidays. I just got to be honest. If I'm going to pick a favorite, I'm sorry, but that's kind of my favorite.
Good.
But I love that one. So I want to thank both of you, David Serda, AJ Wright. Thank you. Congratulations. I can't wait till the next thing you do, and I'm happy to be cast as the lead in whatever show comes up next.
Okay.
Well, I'm gonna give thought to this. Wait, what shall we do? Anyway, congratulations, guys. Thank you. Well, with a little Golden Girls theme, with my thanks to you guys and for everybody for tuning in to this week's podcast. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel.